Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to a Sunday special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M. from New Jersey, recovered compulsive overeater, and grateful to be your moderator this morning. Today is Sunday, July 7, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, July 5th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,548. That's 21548. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,549. That's 21549. This morning, A Vision for You presents Change, a Journey from Belief to Reliance. The way we live and manage our lives brings us to the end of our rope. Our willful efforts and self-reliant ways fail us, and they fail us utterly. We are the architects of our own misery. In our self-reliance, our ego drives us to attempt to attain happiness through inherently external remedies. By worship of other things, people, schemes, relationships, food, money, for example. We are convinced these things will fulfill us, satisfy us, only to discover through a lot of pain that they don't deliver what they promise. We will determinedly, persistently, unrelentingly wrestle with self-reliance and often refuse to accept its detrimental impact on our lives. As with personal powerlessness, our instincts are naturally resistant to the idea of dependence and reliance on a power greater than ourselves. It is a symptom of our spiritual illness. The reality is that our solution to life isn't working. We suffer with the juggernaut of self-will and self-reliance, and we suffer, and we suffer, and we suffer until we have suffered enough to be willing to look for something better. What exactly is that something better? What is the solution? According to the Big Book, the solution for us is God. God reliance. When we are willing to believe differently, we can decide differently. We can choose differently. We can act differently. We can become different. We can become recovered, living in a new world with a new vision. Yes, indeed, we can change. As a result of the 12 steps, we are taken from the world of self-reliance to a path of God-reliance. Joining us today to speak on the topic of change, a journey from belief to reliance, is Donna W., a recovered compulsive overeater from California. Donna is dedicated to our 12-step process of recovery and dedicated to carrying this message. And with great appreciation, I welcome Donna W. to the line this morning. Good morning, Donna.
Thank you, Leah, and thank you, everyone, for sharing your valuable time with me today. My name is Donna W. I'm grateful and recovering compulsive eater in California. I'm really grateful for my abstinence, my recovery, and to be part of this valuable community. Leah was sharing that we're coming up to our 12th birthday, and I've been calling into Vision for You, I think, for about 11 years now. I've been in program, in October. I'll be in program 22 years, and I call my abstinence a year from that, so 21 years. I am maintaining a weight release of about 65 pounds, and I guess I'll dive in. So change, a journey from belief to reliance. Now, I work with companies. I'm a consultant. I work with companies. I work with high growth companies to keep their customers so that they can grow their business exponentially. So that's what I do. And I got to tell you that I learn a lot from program that is in my business. And one of the things I heard in a meeting was the phrase, transformation, not information. And that's kind of the theme for today as well, actually. But I use that in my business all the time because I help companies who, it's mostly high tech, but like, you know, they deploy their software, but if they just give information to their users, there's not going to be any change happening. So I'm really interested in change and change management, and I've been learning about change from Joe McHugh of Joe and Charlie, and from reading the big book and attending these meetings, of course. And so I'm just kind of chewing on all of this and wanted to share what I'm thinking about and what I'm learning for myself. So first of all, I know that in the meeting yesterday, we read one of my favorite passages, which I often read at the beginning of my shares on page 30, the beginning of More About Alcoholism. I'm going to reread that, page 30, top of page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic, that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. So this paragraph is really powerful for me. I'll often read it with I. So I say, I have been unwilling to admit I am a real compulsive overeater. I don't like to think I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows. You know, that's what I want. You know, when I really look at it, I want to be a normal eater. But the way that I define normal is that I can eat whatever I want, whenever I want, as much as I want, without any consequences. And like many of you, I was at some 4th of July festivities, realizing, I was talking to my sponsor yesterday, there's something about this casual eating that other people can do. And I'm like, I cannot be a casual eater. This kind of, you know, stick your hand in a bag, grab a handful of something and casually chew on it and then not think about it for a while. Like, I can't do that. I have to sit down and eat a proper meal. That's got the right portions and enough of the right things so that I don't have to think about food again for the next 3 to 4 to 5 hours. And it's kind of a bummer because a lot of people use food as entertainment, as comfort. And I did for a long time. I still find myself wanting a treat, you know. So how did I get into program? Well, my top weight was 194. One of the things I would do, I was in a very stressful job at the time. I would come home from work and sit on the couch and watch TV and go through a whole bag of tortilla chips and just be disgusted with myself. And I was going to these important meetings, but I could hardly button the pants on my suit and could hardly breathe during the meetings. And For years, I just thought, you know, if I could just figure myself out, then I'll stop this eating thing. You know, I just need to figure myself out. And I thought if I could just find the right book, the right crystal, the right essential oil, you know. And then I went to therapy and I thought if I could just figure myself out, then I could stop this this eating because I was very, you know, I am very organized and disciplined in most areas of my life, but food. And I heard people sharing yesterday, like, you know, they in every other part of their lives, they want to be different, but with the food, they want to be the same, you know? And that's my obsession. I want to be able to control and enjoy my food. I want to eat it like a lady, but I eat it like an animal, you know? So, I was going to this therapist and she suggested that I check out OA and I was horrified. I'm like, me? Like, I've got it so together, you know, like me, part of a 12-step program with those people. I was just horrified at the suggestion, but she was actually in a way as well. And so I went to some meetings. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work the steps. I put myself on my own food plan and I kept gaining weight. And I thought, well, this obviously doesn't work. And then about a year and a half later, I had a party at my house, and it was a big party. Lots of people came. And after everyone left, I was home alone with the leftovers and was doing the hand-to-mouth thing and going, I'm not even hungry. Like, why am I doing this? And it was like a penny dropped. I'm a compulsive eater. And that was a Sunday. And a Tuesday, I went to a meeting, which was just like a half a mile from my house. And that became my home meeting. And I've been going ever since. And I was home. I was like, okay, I'm home. So then I started working the steps and I thought, well, I do believe in God. I do have belief. In fact, I'm the only person in my family that believes in God. I've always had a belief in God. And yesterday I was doing some research and read that belief, the definition for belief is a vague idea in which some confidence is placed. So, you know, I came into the rooms. I was not horrified about this God idea because I'm like, well, I do believe in God. And I had some belief. And what I've learned is that, but even before belief, what needs to bring us to the rooms is, you know, some, you know, I've been playing around with some different words here. Is it willingness? Yeah, okay, I'm willing to try something out. But before I'm willing, I need to accept that what I'm doing doesn't work. I need to have some surrender, some defeat, some acceptance that my way doesn't work. Now, I come from a long line of compulsive eaters and obesity. I have one sister who is morbidly obese has said to me, well, you know, I want to do it my way. I haven't seen anything change, but she says, I want to do it my way. So she still is has not been willing to admit that what she's doing does not work. I was not willing to admit that what I was doing did not work. I kept trying the same thing over and over. And you know, I kept trying the same thing over and over and expecting different results, which we've learned is the definition of insanity. So I need to accept defeat. I need to surrender. I need to have some belief that there is another way. And so then we go to, so that's step one. And, you know, if I could figure it out on my own, I would have, right? Because I'm a smart, capable person. If I could have figured it out on my own, I would have. So then we come to step two, which is about a belief, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore me to sanity. Now, the thing is, and I always find this interesting in the big book, it never really talks about that we use, that I'll share that I've used food as my higher power. And you know, when Bill talks about God, I'm always surprised that there isn't any reference to using alcohol as God. And you know, when I was a child, I often felt overwhelmed by life. I was in a loud, gregarious family, and that was what I did. You know, I ate one. That was what I knew to do, and it helped me. And I have to trust that for part of my life, my eating helped me get through. It was a solution, and it helped me during some time, but it's not the only solution. And so really, step two is helping me to see that there's a power greater than myself and greater than my food, and that I have to have some belief that there's something out there that can help me. And that I can see has helped others. Now, so to give an analogy, so I've recently moved to a new area. I moved here 2 years ago. And I have been on the search for the perfect hairdresser. I have curly hair, thick curly hair that I have been to now 4 different hairdressers. And people have told me, oh, this hairdresser is awesome. So I accept, hey, I need a haircut. I need a local hairdresser. So there's some acceptance there. And then somebody tells me about this hairdresser. And so then I have some belief that there's a hairdresser that can help me. But then I'd gone to several and they don't know how to cut my thick, curly, unruly hair. And so I don't trust them, right? So I've gone on and I don't trust them. But what I need to do is get some results in that that work for me. And that's going to lead to that trust, to that faith, that reliance. So I have found someone after 2 years and four hairdressers. I've had one haircut with them, and I'm kind of just testing them out still. So I don't completely trust them yet. I don't rely on them yet, but I'm willing to go back to them. So step two is just starting to go, well, yes, I have some belief in God. Then we move to step three, and I have found step three can be a confounding step because it says that we make a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God. And before I came across A Vision for You, and before I came across the big book, you know, so I've been coming to Vision for You for about 11 years. So that means I've been working my program prior to that about 11 years. And I had never read the big book. I heard people talk about the big book, and I would roll my eyes and call them a big book thumper. And what I, in meetings, I would going to, there was this one meeting I went to, there was a ceremony when you reach step three. And I heard that step three was all about, like, my impression of step three was that I was supposed to have complete, that was where the reliance came in. And that the reason I was struggling after step three was because I never really got my reliance in God. So I struggled with step three for a long time. So I learned a joke in OA, in working these programs, about three frogs. There are three frogs on a log. One frog decides to jump off the log into the pond. How many frogs are on the log? Three frogs are on the log because one of them decides to jump off the log but did not necessarily take action. So all we're doing in step three is making a decision to take some rigorous action. And action is the key word for change. Now, when I work with companies, what they need to do in order to seize the benefits from this technology that they're implementing is they need to take action. They can't just make a decision. They can't just buy a solution. They have to take action. Just like if you tell me about this phenomenal curly hair hairdresser, I might decide to go see them, but I'm not going to get any benefit unless I take the action to schedule an appointment and to go see them and have them actually. We could talk about my hair all day, but I'm not going to see any change unless we take the action to cut my hair. So step three, you know, for like a decade, I always thought, like, what, why, you know, why don't I have a strong belief in my higher power? Why can't I have a strong relationship with my higher power? Why am I still struggling? It must be that I did step three wrong. But all step three is saying is that I need to keep doing the work. So I want to just take a moment and look at the big book on page 12 in Bill's story. After Eddie says, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Bill says in italics, it was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. And that sounds really great. Like, all I need is to believe in God. And that's, and it makes it sound like belief is all we need. But, and that's really step two there. Nothing more was required, but it continues to say to make my beginning, because that's step two. I need to trust that there's a power greater than myself. We need to keep going. I've also heard in a way a saying about Evel Knievel. Some of you might remember the days when Evel Knievel was he was a stuntman jumping his bicycle, And there was a big thing televised where he was jumping his bike across the a section of the Grand Canyon. And he would do things like, you know, ride his bike over, you know, 13 cars and a truck, you know. So belief is believing that Evel Knievel can ride his bike and make it to the other side of the Grand Canyon. But reliance is getting on the back of the bike. And when I heard that, I was like, wow, I don't rely on my higher power. I have a strong belief in God. God's out there. God's there. And I have always felt that even as a kid, but reliance, that's a whole nother thing. So how do we get to reliance? We do that by taking action. So so step one is acceptance or willingness. Step two is belief. Step three is making a decision. And it is a crux step, because if we don't make a decision, then we're going to stay stuck. And I have sponsored countless people over the years. I've been in a program. And once we move into the action step, step four, that's often where people fall away. It's a lot of action required to take that inventory, to start to clear away the wreckage of our past, to take a fearless and moral inventory. And that's where a lot of sponsees stop calling and they don't it's not convenient, I'm busy, it's not good timing. And I'm always amazed, like, gosh, when I am abstinent and recovered, I get through life more smoothly, more harmoniously. It's the right time to work the steps, but you know, and the thing is, in our society, everyone thinks we can just lose weight, do that quickly and easily, get that silver bullet, and also that losing weight is going to be make life better. And I still suffer from that delusion. I heard someone yesterday say, or sorry, that was Friday. Friday say the delusion, the illusion, and there was one other word. But, you know, there is this delusion, and I still have it. I still think that it's about my weight. And the reason I need to put down the food is not just to lose weight. I mean, I look better and feel better when I'm in a healthy body weight, but it's to have that connection with God. Because as long as I'm using food, then I'm blocking that channel with my higher power. And I can't be of service. I can't be, you know, I can't be, I can't rely on God when I'm still relying on the food. And that's what it's about. I still, after all these years of being in programs, still think if I could just lose 5 pounds, everything will be okay. And I'm really hardwired that way. And I still think that the food is about my weight. So I just want to turn that over. It's really about living a life of spiritual recovery. And let me see if I can just find the right page Page 45, I believe, is the thesis of the book. The purpose of and the thesis of the big book is on page 45, where it says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And so that is the thesis. The power solves my problem, and my problem is my addiction. Lack of power is my a dilemma. And, you know, I've always thought, you know, I have been seeking a higher power much of my life, and I've always been looking in the food, and I've given it so much. I've given the food so much power because I think it can do so much for me, and I've also given the weight so much power. Because for me, my being a food addict is not just about what I put in my mouth, but how my body looks and my body weight, size, and shape. Those are big issues and continue to be for me. The purpose of this book is to find a power greater than myself. So the 12 steps is a journey to finding that power. We don't just arrive in step three and it's handed to us on a plate, just like I wanted my food to be handed to me. Okay, so then we move into this rigorous honesty, this inventory. And that's where the hard work comes in. And we start taking action. Now, I looked up, I have a big book version which has an index in the back. So I was looking at the word change. There were some pages of change. But when I looked up the word action, it was amazing how much the big book talks about action. And most of it was in steps 5 through 10. It just says, like over and over, I'll just say on a few pages, it says, you know, faith without works is dead. It says that twice, page 76 on one of them, that we're willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Page 83, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to listen. Step 4, it says that we're going to embark on a course of vigorous action on page 63. I found the word action, act, or actions 30 times. After on page 85, as we go move into step 11, more action is required. And I just, when I was looking at the word action, just found this sense of urgency. And I've heard many people say, you know, that I've been trying to think myself into right acting, to act ourselves into right thinking. All right, so let me just gather my thoughts. Oh, so the 12 steps is a program of action. It's called a course of action. And that's the prescription, is that we take action. And on page 94, it says, in working with others, that there would be doubt whether you would have made progress if you had not taken action. So action is the key. The action is the prescription and the key to change. And the big book is trying to help us to make a spiritual change, to make that transformation, to change our hearts and mind. And change is hard. And I know from working with companies that change is hard, that they can't do this on their own. And one of the reasons change is hard is that we like to stay with what is familiar. We like to stay in our comfort zone, even if we know it doesn't work. People are really resistant to change. We are literally the way our brains work, we are literally wired to resist. And our brains really resist anything that is new or unfamiliar. So that's why, even though, you know, I might hate my body, I might be sitting on the couch eating things I don't want to eat, it's still hard to change. And I like to help people when we're working through the steps, that I say the steps work us. You know, we don't really work the steps work me. I just need to do the next right step. I just need to take the action and then allow the transformation to take place. So then let's talk a bit about that trust, that reliance, that faith. And reliance means certainty based on past experiences. Other words are trust, faith, and also to bind or fasten. And so that's what we're looking for. Start from this vague idea that maybe somebody has made a recommendation, and then we move to reliance, which is based on past experience. So now I'm hoping to be relying on this hairdresser now that I've had some experience of them and I'm working with them on my hair. Then I'm going to have some reliance on them, and I might recommend them to you. If you have curly hair, you might have that belief, but you're not going to have that reliance or trust in them until you have that until you take that action and you have that experience. So, you know, I've been thinking about myself, well, what's my reliance on my higher power? And how do I know I rely on higher power versus food these days? Well, I have worked through the program many times. I've through the steps many times. I have taken the course of action many times. I have learned through A Vision for You and a Big Book to take sponsees through the course of action quickly. Because if all we're going to do is read about it and talk about it, we're not going to see the change. So we move through quickly and we start this vigorous course of action. And so things that I do, well, for example, I was over the 4th of July week, I was in Oregon on whitewater kayaking. So that's a pastime of mine. I've been doing that for a while, but I get really scared. I've had some health issues and I haven't been kayaking as much lately. And I get so scared going down the whitewater rapids. And so I was scared, and I'm scared, I can't breathe, I can barely move my body, which are not good things to do on a whitewater river. And I just started asking my higher power for help, and I started hearing things like, you know, it's okay to have fun, it's okay to relax. If I wasn't scared, what might I be feeling? And I realized I felt some excitement that I often mistake for fear. So that was a way that I checked in with my higher power, and I could hear things that I wasn't hearing in my own head. I could hear things that weren't part of my thinking. From working this program, I've learned to pray and meditate. So that was some prayer. I meditate in the morning. And, you know, what I've learned is to have a relationship with my higher power, so that I can rely on my higher power, I need to invest some time and energy into my relationship with my higher power, just like with any other relationship. And so I do some, I call it my quiet time. I read, write, and meditate. So I read a page or two from the Big Book and other program literature. I do some writing in my journal, and then I meditate. I do find that my higher power does connect with me through writing. And so that's a great way for me to kind of to get some connection, and through my meditation. I do also, I have also learned that my higher power speaks to me in very short, specific ways. So I think I was talking to my sponsor. We were saying, you know, we were both sharing how my mind talk is loud, dramatic, screaming, quite critical, and filled with fear and anger, and it goes on and on. My higher power is very quiet and speaks like in, you know, in very simple words. And so the more that I get quiet, first of all, I can't hear my higher power if my brain is busy, if my mind is full. So that's where the meditation really helps. And then I hear very quiet, like, you know, I'll be like, oh my God, I got all these problems. And I'll hear, drink water, take a bath, get to a meeting. Those are the kinds of phrases I hear from my higher power. Very simple, like bullet points. But again, I can't hear those if I'm loud in my head. So I spend time connecting with my higher power, and I do my morning quiet time, and then I do some reflection at the end of the day. I ask God to run today's show. I ask God to keep me safe and protected from inner and outer harm and suffering, and to keep my thoughts, away from the self-pity and destructive thinking. So those are things that I do. I call my sponsor every day. I make some outreach calls when I can. I write in my journal, and then I sponsor. You know, I was having these health issues, and I had some time where I could not sponsor, and I realized, and you know, I heard in meetings like it, the way that we keep going through the steps over and over and over and taking that action is by sponsoring. So I do sponsor. I have 4 sponsees right now, which is a lot for me. But that taking that action too, you know, it's like, oh God, who's got time for this? I'm a busy person. But that's the action that I need to keep taking, making calls, taking people through the steps to keep me close to my higher power, close to program, remembering how bad it can be, you know, and I can get to a place where like, oh, you know, I've got a busy life. Well, I have a full, busy, wonderful life because I've been working my recovery. I'm happily married. I'm an active person. And I get to have all this because I've worked my program. I've moved from belief to relying on a higher power and relying on program and moving that reliance away from my self-reliance and my food reliance to a power much greater than myself who can solve my problem and can help keep me from falling into my patterns of self-pity, self-obsession, fear, dishonesty. And so I keep working this program every day. Because what happens to me is I'll wake up, I'll do my meditation, my journaling, and then I go agnostic throughout the day. So I do believe in God, but I have agnostic moments because then I keep thinking it's up to me or it's up to the food or it's up to others. I rely on other people. And so it's a constant journey for me to keep remembering that that I have a higher power greater than myself that I can rely on. So I need to take this vigorous course of action every day, this prescription every single day so that I can stay close to my higher power so that I can keep my brain quiet enough that I can hear my higher power. And, you know, a lot of people share that their eating disease wants to kill them, and you know that's something I feel like I'm just really hardwired to eat. I don't feel like my disease is out to kill me. I'm hardwired to eat. I'm hardwired to use food, and I'm still working on the neural pathways. They're lessened, and I'm building new neural pathways to connect with my higher power. The truth is, when I'm in the food, I'm not fully alive. That is the truth. It's not a life that I want to live. I'm angry at myself, and that anger leaks out on others, like my husband, when I'm in the food. So it's not a life I want to live. I know that I have so much more. I'm here to be of maximum service, and I get to do that through my work and through my social connections and my. Let's see. On page 93, we'll look at that page. This is working with others. It says, to be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. And so, you know, at my heart, I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm fear-based. I'm dishonest, and I have a chance when I continue to be doing self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. I have a chance when I do that. All right, so I'm just going to look at my other bookmarks to see what else I want to say before I wrap up. Oh, yeah, into action on page 83. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So I'm just going to pause there. I'll just say that again. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And that's into action. And page 98, working with others. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. And I'll wrap up with in page 143, to employers. Though you're providing him with the best possible medical attention, he should understand that he must undergo a change of heart. To get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we could have lost both home and business. So I will pause there. Thank you for helping me share my thoughts around change, that we have to move from belief to reliance through action.
Thank you, Donna W., for your thorough and instructive, beautiful presentation this morning. Thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with the fellowship this morning. The today's share ID, 21,551. That's 21551. Donna's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so please do stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to a question and answer segment. If you'd like to pose a question to Donna, only questions, please. You can press star one. I need your name, including the initial of your last name.
Tamara C.
Tamara, good morning.
Judith S.P.
Jim.
Judith. Jim.
Jim. Jim F. from Illinois.
Thank you, Jim.
Hana Yetta R. from Texas.
Gotcha. Thank you, Hana Yetta.
Pedro B. from California.
Becca R. Pedro. Is that Mary Lee?
Becca R.
I didn't catch that. I'm sorry. Can you repeat your name? The
Becca R.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you, Becca. Sorry about that. All right. Well, this is a good group to start with. I have Tamara C., Judith S.P., Jim F., Hanietta R., Pedro B., and Becca R. So let's get started. Tamara, your question, please.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, Leah. Donna, thank you so much. That was really just so full of things I really needed to hear this morning. I really appreciate your service and sharing your story. My question is related to that. I can so identify with like feeling close to higher power in the morning and then going agnostic throughout the day. And I wanted to ask, when you noticed that, oh my goodness, I'm going agnostic. Is there any particular prayer or action that you take in that moment to get you back connected to higher power?
Oh, thanks, Tamara. Good to hear your voice. I've been starting a meditation practice recently where I meditate twice a day. And what I've been noticing since I've been doing that is in the afternoon, like I start getting frazzled, like my brain just starts getting into overdrive. And so even if it means 5 minutes, I will try to take some time. But what I'm also finding is just 10 breaths, stopping to breathe 10 times. And like I move from shallow breathing to deep breathing. And I was doing that on the river. And it's amazing what a shift can happen in 10 breaths. And 10 breaths probably takes about 90 seconds. So that helps just to stop and breathe. Also, making outreach calls, that's a great way, even if I leave a voicemail, to hear kind of what I'm thinking in my brain, to voice that can really shift things for me. Also, my prayers are really simple. Hi, God. Help me, God. Just even saying hi, God, that is huge for me. Like, I'm not one for big, long, complex prayers. And sometimes I did just have to say, hi, God, to remember that there is a higher power. When I was going through the depths of this illness that I've been dealing with, I was really angry I felt really abandoned by my higher power because, you know, that wasn't part of my plan. And what I learned from others is that even if things are going my way, sometimes it's telling God, like screaming at God and swearing at God and saying, like, this isn't working for me. Like, I don't want this. How dare you do this to me? I'm really angry at you. I'm still having a relationship with my higher power. So sometimes even just telling God, like, hey, God, you know, I'm really tired. This isn't working for me. It's not always, I don't always have to be nice to my higher power. But if I'm talking to God, I'm still talking to God versus abandoning God and trying to figure it out on my own. I'm very, very, very slowly learning that when I get overwhelmed, it's because I'm trying to do it all myself and that I'm not meant to. Like, overwhelm means I'm doing things I'm not meant to be doing on my own. I was taught to be, you know, a strong, independent woman who can figure it all out on my own. And so when I'm getting overwhelmed and tired, that I'm, you know, my wiring is that I go faster and try to do more. But I am starting to realize, wow, that's when I actually need to slow down, maybe ask for help, and maybe take a rest rather than trying to go into a turbo drive.
Thank you, Tamara, for your question. Judith SP, your turn.
Hi. Thank you, Leia, so much for your ongoing service. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you, God. And also, of course, thank you, Donna. I will be listening again. There were many, many gems, information, transformation, the example of finding a hairstylist for curly hair. I can relate. Some of that has to do with me accepting imperfection. But in any event, as I was listening, what really kind of halted me was when you said you speak to your sponsor every day. I've had two wonderful sponsors and speak periodically. One is in a situation that I can't right now. And I know this program is suggestive. Everybody does it the way they do it. I wonder if you can speak to how you come to speak to your sponsor every day, how that relates to reliance on God. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Judith. Well, you know, I call my sponsor every day no matter what. Now, I was in Oregon without cell coverage, so I didn't then. But the minute I got cell coverage, I called her. And, you know, we have whenever I'm on a road trip, I call her, greetings from here, greetings from there. So I call her wherever I am. I was in London in February, and I got a cell plan so I could call my sponsor every day and talk to my husband, of course. But that's what I do. Now, I'm a crazy person, and I really need to tell someone what's going on in my head every day. And it means so much to me to know that there is someone in this world who is walking this journey with me, who knows my ups and downs. And maybe I'm having a bad day and I can be, you know, really having a rough time, and she can remind me that how great I was yesterday, you know. She you know, I get so stuck in the moment or in the specifics, and she sees the long journey. It just helps me to check in with someone every day, and somebody who knows who gets my crazy thinking. So how does that help me with my reliance on my higher power? Well, you know, actually another word I meant to say earlier was humility. It's humility calling my sponsor every day, knowing that I need help. It's humility to say, knowing that I'm not alone. I don't have to do this alone. And it helps me share what's going on in my head. She reminds me to, you know, often when I'm going through things, she'll remind me that I have a higher power. She reminds me about passages in the big book. So, you know, she's not just a friend I'm calling. She's somebody who lives a life of recovery that helps me to get back to my life of recovery. And sometimes I leave voicemails every day for a week, and then we have a long chat. You know, when I get her on in real time. So we don't have a specific time, we talk every day. But she's a person living in recovery that knows me and loves me and is on the journey with me. And that brings me closer to my higher power.
Thank you, Judith SP, for your question. Jim F., good morning. Your turn.
Good morning. Thank you, Donna, so much for that. I know I'm going to be listening again, probably over and over. It was really, really good. So my question is how does a wife, successful businesswoman, and I'm sure many other hats that you wear, sponsor four people at one time? So maybe just a quick Cliff Notes version of how you sponsor, what that might look like, if that is a good question. Thank you.
Sure. And thank you, Jim, for your question. So yes, four is a lot. Two of them are kind of in maintenance mode, so I'm not talking to them a lot. But so what I've learned really from working in Vision for You is I go through the steps very quickly. We go through the big book, and we try. The goal is it's about a step a week, but you know, life happens. And so we do. It's probably about 3 to 5 months to get through the steps. So we go through the steps, and what I learned from working with a sponsor in the Vision for You, there's some great special editions like this one on specific steps. So I'll have them listen to those, and there's some real program people who have just been real dedicated to the big to studying the big book, and you know, I feel like they can learn so much by listening to me. So when we start, I like to read through a doctor's opinion together, because that's like really the foundation. And then I have them read chapters in the big book and listen to these special editions related to those steps. And then we meet and we talk through that. So we meet once a week, we talk through that, and then we go through. I have a sponsee, we're going to do step five tomorrow afternoon. And once we get to step five, things move really quickly. So actually, maybe it's not always a step each week, because then we do step five, six, and seven all in one day. Just we keep that momentum going. So they call me once a week to focus on that specific step. I do also have them call me every day, and either we talk or they leave a voicemail to check in, and then they send me what they ate that day and their plan for the next day. So like I said, I have two sponsees who are just kind of checking in with me as they need, and I'm working one of them rigorously through the steps, and one of them we're just getting going. So that's four is a lot for me. I would say two is probably pretty more usual. And I also want to say, like, for example, tomorrow we're going to do a fifth step. I'm like, oh my God, who's got time for that? That's an inconvenience. Like, I often don't want to do this, right? But in the big book, I can't tell you what page, it says we must be inconvenienced. You know, I don't work a spiritual program of recovery and not be inconvenienced. So, but you know what, whenever I meet, and one of my sponsees is going through a rough time, and I agree to, you know, she has to talk today. Whenever we talk, it helps me so much, you know, so it's never a waste of time for me, but I always think I don't have time for it. So yes, I take action every day by being part of working with others. And, you know, that's how I stay recovered, is working with others. Oh, and you know, one thing I forgot to mention, I knew I was supposed to cover more steps. Another thing I do is step 10. So that's action I take throughout my day. I, you know, when I'm disturbed, I do a 10th step. And sometimes I do them in my head. I call other people, I write them down. I just make sure I do the 10th step. So that's action I take it whenever I need it as well.
Thank you, Jim F., for your question. Next, we have Hanayeta R. with a question.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. You're always there for us. And Donna, thank you so much for What a inspiration to hear you. What I heard you say was that your inner and outer thoughts, and I wanted you to maybe elaborate on what that is for you. Are you talking about the inner thoughts of like the messages that you get in your head, or the thoughts when you meditate? I'm taking what you said out of context, and I can't remember what was around it, but I'm hoping you could answer that.
I think I get what you're asking, Hannah. So I want, you know, through working program, through doing regular reading, writing, and meditating, I am able to distinguish my own inner thoughts to what I hear as my higher power. And what I've learned through that is that when my higher power speaks to me, it sounds differently. It sounds calm, quiet, and it's very brief and succinct. Whereas, you know, I go into these spinning, ranting and raving and fear and remorse and, you know, shame. And I just keep looping and, you know, but when I get quiet, I can hear this kind of still, calm, brief messages that I get some clear direction, you know. And it's not like I get it all handed to me in a wrapped up package of exactly how I want. You know, I might be thinking like, should I go on this trip? Should I buy this thing? And I'll hear, drink water, you know, and just to take care of myself, right? So that's how it works for me. What I know in my life, my higher power is often kind of off in the distance, and so it's been a long journey to try to be closer to my higher power. And so I heard somebody in a meeting say that they prayed to their higher power about how they could relate to them and better. So I did that, and I was trying to connect with my higher power in one way, and it took about 3 months of me praying, hey God, how can I connect with you? How can I relate? And it came to me, and it was the complete opposite of how I was trying to connect with my higher power. And so that's, you know, all I can say is to for you is to, you know, pray to your higher power. Hey God, how do you want me to connect with you? How can I hear you? And then keep praying. And it's not going to happen immediately. Maybe it will. But then just start to, you know, ask, hey God, how can I hear you? And maybe that will become clearer.
Thank you, Hanayeta, for your question. Pedro B, your turn.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. Your question, please.
Yeah, thank you so much, Donna. I really, I don't know, there's no words to express what I'm feeling about you here. I've been in food program for over 15 years, and I haven't been able to stay abstinence. Right now, recently I had an operation, I had a pacemaker put in, and I overate, and I don't know, you know, and I get about 90 days, the question is, what can you suggest to me so that I can stay abstinent?
Well, thank you for your question, Pedro. You know, all I could say is that keep, you know, I don't know if you're working the steps, but if you've done the steps, I would go through them again, find a sponsor and work through the steps, action, more action. That's what I would say. I also know, you know, through years of being in program for quite some time, I tried to use OA as a way to beat myself up every time I, you know, had a slip or didn't do things perfectly. And, you know, speaking today, I'm like, oh my God, how can I speak? Like, I'm not perfect. And a program friend helped me to remember to say, isn't it great that I'm sick enough to have something to share? So I learned that. You know, I'm here because I'm not perfect. So, for a long time, I would just, any time I used food or gained weight, I would just beat myself up. And I'm trying to, you know, my higher power doesn't want to beat me up. And when I work with sponsees, I'm not here to beat them up. You know, it's about finding a gentle way. It's such a challenge because I really see that I need a program for me that is gentle and loving, but I also need to be really firm and take action and you know, an action that I didn't talk about earlier was the first action is you got to put down the food, you know, any food that I'm not neutral with, I got to put down the food. That's the first action. So, it's working the steps and being, you know, it's everything I said, having that willingness, admitting defeat, acceptance that I can't do it on my own, and then getting a sponsor and working the steps. That's how I recommend. And then that rigorous action, because the minute I rest on my laurels and think that I have arrived because I've lost weight or whatever, then it's all going to think. Then I think I'm in charge. I'm not in charge. I got to keep surrendering to my higher power every day. Every day I wake up forgetting that I can't eat like normal people. So I have to take action every day. On my camping trip, I was in my tent writing down what I ate every day in my notebook. You know, I have to do that. I'm not a normal eater.
Thank you, Pedro, for your question. Becca R., your turn. Becca, star one to unmute.
Hey, it's Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater, calling from Kentucky. Thanks for the share this morning. I really appreciate it. A lot of nuggets from it. My question is, have you ever worked with a sponsee who has gotten or found themselves back in the food while, I guess, staying in OA, you know, still sponsoring, and do you stay with that sponsee if there's a dishonesty of not being honest with the food and how to navigate that? Thanks.
Thank you, Becca R. Absolutely. So, you know, we're not perfect, and I think food is really, really hard, really hard. I live in a small town, and there's an amazing AA meeting that I can walk to. I've been going to that a lot. I'm not an alcoholic, but it's just so amazing to go in the meeting and get recovery. And yesterday, I think there were 60 people there. It's packed. So I love Vision for You. I also love having the chance to go to some in-person meetings. Oh my God. Alcohol sounds so much easier than food because you just put down this thing and not have it again. And with food, I get to eat every day. And I think food is really hard. I heard it as it's like for ninja recovery. So we are ninja spiritual warriors here. And I have a sponsee right now who's pregnant, who's been having a really hard time. She's been in the food. And I just say, like, let's just start with rigorous honesty. Tell me what you're eating, you know? Like, we have, there's so much shame and blame when it comes to eating. So, you know, we start with being gentle. But if you're not ready, you're not ready. Like, that step one takes, we have to start with that admission of defeat, with surrender, with accepting that there's another way. And if people aren't ready for that, then, yeah, then we move on. So I can work with people who are ready to take all the action, that vigorous action required that we talked about. But I don't just like say, sorry, you're gone. You know, we talk about it. We work on it. And sometimes I'm not the right person. So they need to work with someone else. They can't, you know, I'm not helping them work through it. But I'm not here to you know, my what I've learned in my early years, I thought people had to do it my way, and I was all about following my rules as a sponsor. But through working the program, I've learned my job as a sponsor is to help you find your higher power, to help you put your hand not in my power's hand. And so that's the goal. And so if there's a way to help you get closer to your higher power through your struggles, we work on that. But if you're not ready to work to take the action, then yeah, then we move on.
Thank you, Becca R., for your question. We still have time for questions. If you'd like to pose a question to Donna, star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the initial of your last name.
Margaret Dean, Georgia.
Margaret.
Freya H.
Freya. Anyone else like to ask a question this morning? Great opportunity. All right. Well, let's get started with Margaret D, followed by Freya H. Go ahead, Margaret.
Thanks, Leah. Hey, good morning. Simple question. Do you find that the more that you pursue this relationship with your higher power, the more lighthearted you become? I hear you say over and over again that you're not perfect. Do you come to a place where it's actually a joke? About, or not really a joke, but where you lose a lot of the heaviness, if that makes any sense.
Thank you for your question, Margaret. Yeah, that's a good question. I'll have to think about that. I think I would like to think that I don't dwell in all that shame and blame that I did. I'd like to think I'm more forgiving for myself. That, you know, okay, you know, move on. Like I could be remorseful about a meal that I ate, but 3 days ago, but like, you know, that meal is over, like move on. Yeah, I mean, I still have the full range of human emotions. I've learned from Harlan, we do not raise above being human. But I have ways to deal with them now so that they're not controlling me and I'm not living a life of, you know, being reactive. So I'd like to think that I respond to things more appropriately. And then I have tools that I can use. So I call people, I you know, write, I pray, I meditate. So I have tools so I don't have to just stay stuck with things. So I would say I still feel the same things, but I don't stay stuck in them. But again, I have to take action in order to move through them and not just stay stuck in them and then think that food's the only option.
Thank you, Margaret, for your question. Freya H., your turn.
Thank you. Good morning, Freya H. I'm recovered in Colorado. Thank you so much, Donna. I love the topic. Talking about change and going from, you know, going into true reliance. And my question is there a point at which you remember that shift taking place for you? Maybe a point in a certain place in the steps, or just seeing the world differently where it was safe or it made more sense? Like finally, it was an option to really, you know, take that leap of faith into relying on higher power.
Oh, thank you, Freya. Well, you know, for a long time working program, I felt angry, you know, like in my first 10 years, because what the hell? I wasn't perfect yet. what the hell? I didn't have like this, you know, bouncing through life on a cloud. And also, boy, I got to tell you, when I got to my goal weight, I was furious because I thought like my whole life would be better. That was my delusion, was if I can only lose weight then. And when I got to that weight, I was just furious because I was still me. I've heard, and thankfully I just kept coming to meetings and working my program. And that's the thing I do. I just keep working my program and keep coming to meetings. Life is good. Life is bad. I'm healthy. I'm ill. You know, I'm single. I'm married. Whatever's going on, I just keep trudging the road. And I heard someone say, you know, that for him, spiritual recovery was that he gets up and makes his bed every day and brushes his teeth. So I can look for the small things, like I'm willing to be inconvenienced and work my program and be a sponsor. That's some spiritual recovery, that I can stop and take that 10 breaths. That's some spiritual recovery. I don't feel like I've had this huge corner I've turned and I'm a different person. Absolutely not. It's very subtle, just like my higher power is very subtle. My willingness to meditate and feeling like I'm a better person when I take some quiet time. On this trip, I was kayaking and camping with over 20 people, and I was overwhelmed. I mean, I get overwhelmed by that many people, and I often took myself off alone because I needed to take care of myself. I would say my spiritual, quote, enlightenment is my willingness to take small actions through the day. And for me, saying, hi, God, help me, God, thank you, God, those are my prayers that just help me remember really simply that I have a higher power. I might be riding my bike to the grocery store and I'll just say, hi, God. And it's like, bam, oh, yeah, that is my mission right there, that I have a higher power. Hi, God. I keep it really simple. So no, I don't feel like I'm a spiritual person or recovered because I have my full range of human emotions, but I'm willing to take the action. And, you know, what I heard from like somebody who's like a Buddhist monk or something, you know, I always thought, God, if I could just meditate enough, I would stop having all these thoughts. But when I meditate, that's where I get to see my thoughts. And people, and this Buddhist monk was saying they just see their thoughts even louder and bigger. And so that, you know, my mind's job is to think. So when I meditate, it's not about not thinking. It's just about having the thoughts there and not being attached to them. So those are things that I'm learning, but I still feel like, yeah, I'm very much myself, that I don't have to get so attached to all those thoughts, and I have the tools to move through them, and that, you know, this a huge awareness is my job is to be of service to others. So I get to show up to places and help out and remember that it's not about me and getting all my needs met all the time. So that's a big spiritual, shift for me. Like, you know, that it's not about me and that I get to show up and help others. I try to do that, and it helps me get out of me. And when I go to places and I'm thinking of others, I have a much better time. Thanks.
Thank you, Freya H., for your question. We have time for a couple more questions. Anyone else have something on their mind that they'd like to ask Donna? Star one to unmute.
Deborah M.
Deborah M. Anyone else? Final invitation for questions this morning. Going once.
This is Kate twice. From Massachusetts.
And Kate. Okay, excellent. All right, Deborah M., your question, please.
Hi, thank you so much for this time. Thank you all for your service. I'm on the East Coast. My name's Deborah M., and you've probably touched on it, but maybe there's a little bit more information. When you move into the belief, into the reliance, is there some kind of a clue? I understand you'll be taking the action, but is there something in you that says, oh, I have just moved from reliance on myself into a God reliance, and it's kind of like a little red alarm that goes off. So thank you. I pass.
Thank you for your question, Deborah. Well, I like to think that the steps worked me, but rather than me working the steps. So I think there is, you know, that's what the big book promises, that we work the steps and we will have this spiritual experience and a reliance on our higher power. So by working the steps and clearing away the wreckage of the past and making amends and having that rigorous honesty and, you know, looking at our character defects and being willing to have them removed. So yes, there is that shift from reliance, from self-reliance to God-reliance, because I'm learning how to do that through working the steps. And then I get to do that every day by working all the steps through a 10th step. And then I continue to do that through being of service and helping others and sponsoring. So that is a journey, and we have in the big book, it talks about the educational and the educational variety and the spiritual awakening, and then the educational. Mine is very slow. I have never had a burning bush experience. It's very slow. And then, like I said, I go agnostic through the day. And so, sure, maybe if I start thinking about food, I just ate a meal and suddenly I'm hungry, then, yeah, that might tell me that I need to, there's something going on. When I'm overwhelmed, that's telling me I'm being self-reliant. When I'm trying to run the show, trying to control people. So those are clues to me that I'm being self-reliant. And that I need to maybe take some quiet time, or say hi to God, or make an outreach call, or, a big part is I have to tell on myself. You know, that's one reason I call my sponsor every day. I got to tell on myself because I'm an addict. And so I continue to have, you know, negative, destructive thoughts, and I get to tell on myself, so I don't need to dwell there. So it's, sometimes it can take me a moment. Sometimes it could take me several days, depending on what's going on when I realize I'm being self-reliant, you know. It took me a long time with this illness I've been dealing with, I felt abandoned by my higher power, and I was a power, and I was, I probably had quite some time there where it took me to remember that, oh, you know, I need to have a relationship with my higher power. I'm trying to do this on my own. So it's an ongoing, for me, it's an ongoing dance or wave, you know, that I'm getting on and falling off of. I just read in Voices of Recovery about, you know, the joyful surfing. Yeah, it's like falling off the wave and catching a wave. So it's a constant dance for me. And again, that's where all that action has to take place, because I don't get to that place without action. So it's not a place, just like with my weight, like I want to lose weight and get to my perfect weight, and I just want to lock it in and never have to worry about my weight again. But every day I'm going to weigh something different depending on how much water I ate, depending on how much elimination that's happened that day, how much food I ate, how much activity. Like I'm a dynamic person. And I despite how much I want to lock in my weight and live at that perfect weight forevermore, I'm a dynamic person. That's not possible. And I'm a dynamic person, and life happens to me and for me. And so I get, that's why I have 12 steps and a fellowship and tools, and a higher power to help me every day to deal with what's happening every day.
Thank you, Deborah M., for your question. Our final question for this morning comes from Kate.
Hi, this is Kate. I'm a compulsive emotional overeater. And my question is about happy, joyous, and free, because you've been talking about action and belief and reliance and then when you were talking about going on the, you know, the rapids or whatever, the kayak, do you feel that happy, joyous, and free is a byproduct of the steps and all of that? Or are there actions that you feel that you need to take towards happy, joyous, and free? That's my question.
Thank you, Kate. If I'm working my program and I'm miserable, I'm kind of missing the point. If I'm, not eating my compulsive foods, but I'm mean and miserable, then I'm missing the point. So yeah, the word happy is, we talked about trudging the road to happy destiny, being happy, joyous, and free. So yeah, that is kind of the point. It doesn't mean I'm happy, joyous, and free all the time. But you know, for example, yeah, I'm going kayaking because I'm supposed to be having fun and not being a perfect. I'm not there trying to win the Olympics. I'm there to have fun, but my brain wants me to do everything perfectly, and that takes away all the fun. So that does helps me to remember, yeah, that there is this place of being happy, joyous, and free, but it doesn't mean I have to live in that constantly. But and by remembering that there's a happy, joyous, and free place to be, that helps me to take the action to get there more frequently. Does that answer your question?
Kind of. So I'll have to sit with it, but thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so I just want to say, like, it's not like we get to this place of of constant peace and, I just have this image of, sitting there and legs crossed, that's just not life. And I've learned that in program. I thought for a long time, what's wrong with me? I'm still scared. I'm still hungry. I'm still craving food. I'm still angry, and so one, I've learned from Harlan that we do not raise above human emotions. Two, I have tools to work through my human emotions. And three, that I've had therapists to help me when I'm dealing with things that are really hard. But it's not about being happy constantly. That's not what life is about. Life is hard, but I have tools so that I don't have to be living in one. I don't have to do that. I don't have to do life alone. Two, that I get to feel all my feelings today. Some days when I'm having a hard day, it's like, oh, great. I get to feel all my feelings today, including the hard ones. I get to feel what's going on in my life today. I get to experience life rather than being numbed out with food. And so just because the food is down and I have a higher power and I'm working the program does not mean life gets easy. In some ways, it gets harder because I'm not just binging my brains out and not present for it. One of the things that helped me with kayaking was I had this image that if I was good enough, it would be easy and I would just kind of joyfully float down the river. And the big thing that shifted me was realizing this is hard. It's hard work physically. It's scary mentally. It's very technical. I got to think. I got to pay attention to what's going on. It's hard and stressful. What helped me to have fun on the river this last week was realizing that kayaking is hard and stressful. And then I leaned into using my body and realizing that I have to work hard to be a good kayaker. And it's not that I could just float down the river and in a ray of sunshine. It was that it's hard and stressful and I have to put in the work and lean into it to have then that helped me to have fun.
Thank you, Kate, for your question. And thank you so much, Donna, for offering your time this morning and so much of yourself, sharing your experience, strength, and hope with all of us. Very rich and profound presentation it was this morning. So thank you very, very much. Another gem for the archives. The share ID for this presentation this morning, 21,551. That's 21551. We're going to close now from page 164. You'll find it in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.